Welcome to the April 27th, 2019 session of TeamSpeak for HPSDR.
User channel timed out.
My name is Dave, KV0S.
User entered your channel.
And last week I was not able to be here because about an hour before TeamSpeak time, it was a very windy night and a tree fell into a feeder power line and knocked out the electricity for my neighborhood. So I had no electricity until about 2 hours after TeamSpeak time. So we have electricity this week, and so I can be here. We're going to go down the list. I haven't been doing a huge amount of programming. It's spring and a lot of yard work coming along, just like Phil has when he has spring. So next on the list we have Greg ZL3IX, and he's shown as mic muted. And then we have Henry PA0HJA, shown as recording in a way. And then we have Mike AA8K, shown as recording and mic muted. And we thank Mike for posting the TeamSpeak sessions to the TeamSpeakArchive.hpsdr.org. Then we have Phil VK6PH. Go ahead, Phil.
Thanks, Dave. Good morning, good afternoon, evening all. This week I've been working on the FPGA code for the little 10E board. I've had a few problems fitting the protocol 2 code into the very small FPGA, but I've got a working version now with one small bug where the number of bytes being sent is slightly in error, but I think I've found that. I'm just running a compile at the moment to fix it. So we've got a version of Thetis which just ignores the incorrect packet length, and using that, the little 10E board seems to work, which is great because it's one of my favourite little OpenHPSDR boards. So hopefully over the weekend I can get that done, and then I'll get that fixed. We'll get a release of Thetis, which supports that version of the board, and get the code up as soon as we can for the beta testers. So, making good progress. I think feedback so far has been on the Orion boards, been pretty good. Still a little bit more testing to do on the Angelia board, but no major issues seen at the moment. Quite a few little fixes done for Thetis during the week, so thanks to Doug and the rest of the team for doing that. And I'm working on the just fixing up some of the issues we're finding from the beta testers with the FPGA code. So pretty good progress at the moment. That's the news from down under. Back to you, Dave.
Fine business, Phil. And next on the list, we have Rick, the E3MM. Go ahead, Rick.
Hello, Dave, and good evening to everybody. Congratulations, Phil, on all the hard work on the Protocol 2 code. I've been following it on the Reflector. Sounds like a huge effort, but you're making very good progress. Nothing else to report at this end. Just been busy with a whole bunch of things and not too much radio time lately. Back to you, Dave.
Well, fine business, Rick. And next on the list, we have Scotty, WA2DFI. Welcome back, Scotty.
Okay, great. Thanks, Dave. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, you're coming through just fine.
Okay, great. A new computer here, so just wanted to make sure I was getting through. So good evening, good afternoon, everyone. And it's been a while since I've been here, but I thought I'd hop in and see what was going on. I have a few new things I've been working on this week, SDR related, in between keeping the lights on. And Dave, you're aware of some of this, the new Tapper project that we're starting called Tangerine SDR. See, we got to have a cool fruit name, you know, like Raspberry Pi. So we got Tangerine SDR, and it's going to be a modular SDR, a FPGA based direct sampling type. And the idea is to keep the RF modules and the clock module separate from the digital portion of the board of the system. And that's really going to be meant to be paired up with a single board computer. So we're going to have two gigabit Ethernet ports on it, so one can run to your local computer, your single board computer. The idea is the single board computer runs the command and control interface, and then the data actually comes directly from the PC, just like it does today, so we can implement Protocol 2 on it. And the target applications are something some people might have heard of, the Personal Space Weather Station that the HamSci guys in New Jersey are working on to do like ionospheric sounding and some magnetosphere recording too with some magnetic sensors. And they make a whisper-like network, worldwide network internet of internet-connected weather stations that can monitor ionospheric happenings and monitor what happens to the ionosphere when CMEs hit the Earth and things like that. So it's kind of interesting project for that. Also, the idea is by reconfiguring it, you can use it for a Phase 4 ground station, Phase 4 satellite, which is the geosynchronous satellite that AMSAT's working on. So this will be the competition, I guess, or the not competition really, because they cover different areas of the globe, but it will be an additional satellite compared to the, QO100, which is the ESAIL satellite that's up, the geostationary one that the German guys put up, or the, I guess it's a Qatari-based satellite. Anyway, also for experimentation, STEM use, university use, anything like that, it'd be configurable. So I figure a lot of the guys on HPSDR would be interested in this kind of thing because it's a very similar kind of interest, very similar kind of usage. And also and hardware stuff I've got going, I just got an Odroid N2 board. I think last week I got that up and running. Really easy to get up and running if you order the EMMC card. You just plug it in and it basically boots and you're running Ubuntu Mate. And it's really, it's like easiest one of the single boards I've ever brought up. So get to do a little playing with that. See, maybe load, compile PySDR for it. See if I can get that to work. And then I got an order. Phil, you'll be happy about this. I've got an NVIDIA Nano board coming. So maybe play around with something that I don't know if you've seen that board or you probably have one already, but it's pretty cool CUDA core type board. So that's about it for this week. Got the preliminary spec done for the Tangerine SDR, and we're going to get this project rolling pretty quick here. So look for announcements and invitations to join in and participate if you like. Back over to you, Dave.
Well, fine business, Scotty. I'm glad you came along and told everybody. I was aware of this, as you know, and am eager to participate myself as well. So if you have an interest in those kinds of capabilities, I recommend that people think about it. Next on the list is Bill, KD5TFD. Go ahead, Bill.
Hey, well, good evening. Yeah, nothing too much to report here. I'm underwater with work, as usual. Tangerine SDR sounds a little interesting there, Scotty. Keep an eye out for that, and I'll turn it back to you there, Dave.
Well, then next on the list, we have Bob, BE3GKM, shown as recording in a way, and so we're open for general discussion.
Hi, Scotty. Nice to catch up with you, and the new project sounds very interesting. I don't have one of the new NVIDIA boards at the moment. I'm working on a few other projects, but yeah, it looks very interesting, certainly for the sort of thing that stuff I'm working on. I see there's a note down below from Greg. Good day, Greg, regarding using PowerSDR with a transverter. Yes, there is. You can set the local oscillator frequency, and you'll then get a direct readout of the actual frequency you're transmitting and receiving on. I'm just trying to, I haven't actually used it, so I'm just trying to find where it is on in PowerSDR. Well, I'm actually using PET at the moment, but I'll have a look around and see if I can find where the tab is. But the answer is yes, you can set the settings you want, and then it'll actually display the frequency you're transmitting.
All right, thanks, Phil. Just plug my mic in. Is it okay?
Yeah, fine. No problems, Greg.
I had a look in the setup of the version I'm using. I must say I'm using quite an old version to maintain compatibility with my old boards. Is this a feature that came in recently, or has it always been there?
No, it's been there for a very long time. I'm just looking. I think FedEx menus are the same, but on the top, just above the frequency display, there is a row of menus and setup, memory, wave, equalizer. The next one is transverters. So from the left, it's one, two, it's the fifth menu from the left on the very top row.
Oh, right. I see it now. Yeah, I was being too clever. I was looking for it under setup. I didn't even look further to the right than that. I didn't find it in setup. Oh, look, Okay, great. Thanks very much, Bill.
That's okay. I know a lot of people are using it. So, and as Bill says down the bottom, it's been there for a very long time. So you shouldn't have any problems with it.
Yeah, I'm slowly going to become active on the higher frequency bands. I'm going to build a 23-centimeter transverter and then maybe a 3-centimeter one as well. I'm going to be retiring at the end of September, so I'm going to need something else to do.
Okay. Oh, congratulations on the retirement. That sounds fun. Yeah. Okay. Well, you should find that's okay. If not, there's plenty of people using that feature. I'm sure you'll you know, any help you need, people will be able to sort that out for you.
Yeah. Great. Thanks.
So is this for Moonbounce or for local comms?
Not sure yet. I would like to have a go at Moonbounce from a technical point of view, but I have a feeling that having done it once, it might not hold much attraction anymore, whereas the terrestrial stuff is a bit more dependent on atmospheric conditions, maybe aircraft reflections and this kind of thing, so it's a little bit more like top band.
Yeah, understood. A lot of interest over here, particularly on 3-centimeter Moonbounce. I think one of the last world records came from this part of the world, so yeah, lots are going on. Unfortunately, at the moment, don't have the time to play on those things, but hopefully in the future. That's good. Anyway, nice to hear from you.
Yeah, the last world record was one of your countrymen who came over to New Zealand to set it up with somebody in the UK. So that's about as far as you can get. So I think it was a VK7, but I'm not sure. It was definitely one of your countrymen. And he set it up with somebody in the UK. If I try and do Moonbounce with QSOs, it's definitely going to be on a human mode. It's not going to be on one of the JTs or FTs or anything like that. I don't have any time for those.
Yep, understood. Yep, okay, great. Well, good luck, and hope the retirement sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, I turned 67 last month, so I think it's about time now.
So, Phil, have you had a chance to look at that new nano board at all?
Just read some of the data on it, Scotty. But it looks very nice, and certainly it's attractive at that price.
Yeah. So, do you think you'll be able to run DFC on it? Do you think it'll have enough horsepower?
Yes, but the number of GPUs is a little bit lower than the previous boards we were using. But yeah, it'll certainly run DFC. It's really a matter of how many receivers we'll be able to run on it.
Okay, yeah, I don't remember how many CUDA cores. It seems like it's around 100, so it's still around $1 per core, isn't it?
Yeah, they're keeping the price much the same. What was the last one, 192, wasn't it? But certainly with the last one, with the 192 cores, then there was plenty of cores spare even after running quite a few receivers.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that works. So what would I have to do to compile your code to run on that? Is everything available that I could try that out when I get the board?
Yeah, just let me know, and I can point you a link to where you can pick up the code. The other alternative is to drop an email to John Melton, G0RX. He's doing quite a lot of work on the DFC code at the moment, I think. So Probably the quickest and easiest way would be have a chat with John.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah, I can do that. And is he working pretty much exclusively on DFC now, or is he doing anything on the PyHPSDR stuff, or is that kind of off to the side now these days?
No, I think DFC is probably of low priority at the moment. I haven't spoken to John for a while. He was holidaying last time we exchanged emails, but no, I think it's not high priority. We're really waiting for the next version of the Minerva board, which I don't have a date on at the moment.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I know that when I ordered the Nano board, they had a couple of much higher price boards, like what, TK2, I think. There was another one too that was one of them was $600 or $700, and one of them was like $1,500.
Yeah, no, I didn't. We didn't try any of those. I stayed with the TK1 board, which works fine. Yeah, John's still working on his Linux-based HPSDR code, I believe, at the moment. But I'm not quite sure what the current process is. The last time we had a Exchange. He was just off to on holiday for a while, and I haven't caught up since he's been back.
Oh, okay. Well, very good. Well, I've got all these single board computers here now, so I'm getting kind of itchy to compile up his code and run them on some of these and see how it does, because pretty much every one that I got is supposed to outperform the Raspberry Pi 3 by like at least a 3-to-1 factor, sometimes up to 10 or 12-to-1. So they ought to be able to run the code pretty easily, you know, the conventional type Pi HPSDR code. But going to have to upgrade the firmware in the IQ2 so it can run Protocol 2, so we can talk the new stuff. Although I guess at least his the old version of PyHPSDR would do both protocols. You know if he's still preserving that?
Yep. As far as I know, it still supports both protocols, even the latest code.
Oh, okay. Very good. So we can do it right out of the box in the start. But okay, sounds good. And sounds like you're making good progress on DFC. Be interesting to see if we can get it up and running on this really cheap board. I still can't believe they can sell it for only $99.
Well, I guess it's got to be a loss leader.
Yeah, really. And I'm looking at it, and because there's a carrier board, and then there's the SOM, the system on module. And I keep thinking, well, okay, the $99, that's just for the SOM, right? And then the carrier board, you've got to buy extra. But no, apparently it's for both of them.
I had the same view. I thought, oh, well, that's okay, but I wonder how much the carrier board is. But, yeah, I gather for early orders you get, I don't know what it'll be like in the future, but certainly at the moment for the original orders you get both boards.
Yep, so it's going to be really interesting to just even to fire up Linux on it and see how it works and how snappy it feels, because it'll go alongside, you know, the 8 or 10 other boards I've got, so I can get a really good feel for how it's going to work with like Ubuntu or some standard flavor.
So when's your board due? Is it soon?
Yeah, I ordered it about a week ago, and it was back ordered because I got the notice about the time that it was they were sold out.
Oh, okay, yep, saw that too.
Say, Scotty, I've seen physically both of those boards, and I have a friend here in town that likes playing with single board computers. So, just last week I saw one of the Odroid N2s, so that was quite amazing to see. And I regularly use John's Lin HSPR with the IQ2, so it works just fine. There's no problem with that.
So that wouldn't be Dave Witten, would it?
Yes, it is. He's he likes collecting single board computers about as much as you do.
Oh no, we have a duel here. So you can collect more stuff, more cargo, as they say. So the what are you running for the single board computer? Are you using a Pi or are you using something else for the when running John software?
I actually just do it on my Linux box, but I haven't really jumped into buying lots of single board computers except for a few old Raspberry Pis and BeagleBone Blacks.
So maybe Dave needs an IQ2 to conduct his experiments.
Yeah, that would be pretty good. I think I could help him with that. You know, he gets in certain focuses, and that's where he works on it. And he and I are traveling in May together, so I can confirm he will be in Dayton.
Okay, great. Hey, be good to see you again. I didn't get to see you last year because you were busy, so glad you'll be able to make it this year. And got a good set of topics for the forum, and I'm not sure what the other topics are, but I'm speaking in the SDR forum too on the Tangerine SDR, so trying to get the word out there and just generally hanging out, you know, how it'll be fun.
Yep, it will. So those look like good boards, and Dave is always saying, well, this board has this and this and this, but it doesn't have this, and he hasn't quite found the one that has all the little pieces that he wants. The nano boards, the nano board and the other NVIDIA boards, I also have a project at work where it has a lot of graphics processing things to do, and that group pretty much has one of all of them, or more than one of all of them, and they've been playing with this high-end one, so it's really nice to see as well.
So the high-end one, you mean by that, you mean the N2?
No, the NVIDIA boards. I think it's called Xavier.
Oh, okay. So that's like the TK2, or maybe it's the even higher up model than that. So that's the big boy one, right?
So there's the TK1, and then there's a TX1, a TX2, and then Xavier is the high-end one, which looks like it was designed for sticking in a car somehow. It's the way the kinds of power and the way it's designed and how small it is. But it's pretty amazing, but they all use the more or less the same configuration of software.
Oh, okay. So it's like I know what you're talking about. So is it like a Pi form factor, or is it larger like one of the home single board computers? It escapes me now. The ones that we used to always build, about 120 millimeters square, I want to say.
Yeah, it's more like that. I'm thinking it's, I don't think it's, yeah, 120 millimeters. That'd be about it. They are bigger, and but not huge for the computer power that's on it. But a huge part of it is simply heat sinks and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's what I liked about the N2. It's basically half of the weight of it is the heat sink, and most of the thickness is the heat sink. And it's like but interesting enough, you said you've seen one. I was curious whether Dave has one, but it's the same exact width as the Raspberry Pi, with the I/O connector in the same exact spot as the Raspberry Pi, and then the Ethernet and USB connectors over on the side are in the same spot, but it's deeper than the Raspberry Pi.
Yes, that's true. And so, he's got at least one coming, and maybe a couple more. I don't know.
Oh, Dave, you mean?
Yep.
Yeah, I guess I figured he should have. He would have more than I do, because he's the one that turned me on to the Pine. What is it, A9 or whatever that the latest Pine board was last year at Hamvention.
Yeah, he has a couple of those as well, and he's always on the bleeding edge when they're just starting to work. And so he says, well, there's this problem with this one, and there's this problem. And then after a year or so, they work out the bugs.
So what does he use them for? I mean, does he just play around with them, or does he actually run SDR software, or what feature or what function does he use them for?
Right now he's working on basic communications, not with Ethernet, but he's been playing with LoRa right now.
Oh, that sounds interesting. Yeah. So, it's very interesting. And I've heard about LoRa PANs, personal area networks, made with those LoRa chips, but some of them are made with bands that, like 440 band, the 420 band that you can't use here in the U.S.
Yeah. So right now he's just using commercial boards with the frequency they're in, but has an eye on seeing what we can do with amateur bands legally.
Yeah, because I think the ones that work in the 900 megahertz region you can tune them to the ham bands, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, I believe that's true. And then he's also, I mean, his interest is RTK GPS kind of things. So he's very interested in that part of it.
And what part again?
The high-resolution GPSs. And so when you do a high-resolution GPS, you need two GPSs. One is a base and one is a rover, and then they communicate with each other. But that is if you don't have a local standard system broadcasting in your town. But we happen not to have that in our town.
So then he connects the two with the LoRa link?
That's the goal. Goal right now, he can connect them with Wi-Fi, but he was looking at other ways to do that.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, because we're keeping the clock module on the Tangerine SDR separate for this exact reason. And because they're talking about multiple receive SDRs and the ability to measure electron density in the ionosphere by looking at how the different GPS frequency signals pass through the ionosphere.
Well, this stuff is a good hook for Dave because he likes interferometry.
Oh, okay. He'd probably like the Space Weather Station stuff that they're doing then.
Yep. He was a big fan of the Sentinel guys, and there's several. Right now, he's playing with one of these. I'm trying to remember where it's from. I think Germany, but it was a direction finding board set, and so he's playing with those.
Oh, okay, that's interesting. So I get to get more information from both you guys at Hamvention in a few weeks. Seems hard to believe it's only like 3 weeks away.
Yep, it's getting there, and really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I know you can usually get a lot more done with in a 15-minute brainstorming session in person than you can with emails.
Well, emails, it's just slightly disconnected.
Well, guys, I'm going to have to run. Good to chat. Scotty, nice to talk to you again, and hope to catch up again in the near future. See you all next week, 73.
73, Phil.
Nice to talk to you again.
User disconnected from your channel.
Scotty, I've not done everything that you sent me because it was kind of a barrage, and I was traveling a little bit this week, and so hopefully this weekend I can catch up on getting hooked up and organized.
Okay. Well, one of the things we can talk about maybe coming up at Hamvention is I like the idea of your programmer that you did for HPSDR, and if we could get something like that set up, I think we could maybe we could cobble together some hardware that we could actually do some code for before we actually get a DE, before we get a data engine hardware. So it would be something that we could test out and do some development on. So I don't know if that interests you or hope so, but maybe we could get started a little sooner than before hardware comes in.
Yes. Well, the one we have for Protocol 2, right now, it's been very stable for a long time, but I have a number of changes to make it simpler that I've not posted yet. And then the group working on HPSDR has added CRC checks to the packets that are going into the board. So that's a very nice improvement. So I'm trying to wind those pieces together.
Okay. Well, I think we could actually use the IQ2 hardware. And if I just write a bootloader for it that will talk to your software, then we might be able to make that work. I know we've been talking about that for a couple of years now, but since you already have IQ2 hardware, that would be an easy solution.
Yes, and there was a fellow, Rick, N1GP, you may know him. He made the Hermes version of this new Protocol 2 with CRC for my Tepper Hermes, and it just works beautifully.
Oh, okay. Very good. Well, you sent me a note, right, maybe suggesting he might want to do Protocol 2 for the IQ2?
Yeah, I suggested it to him, and he was wondering about on availability of your IQ2s.
Well, that could be arranged if he's going to work on it.
Well, I'll just send him a message and tell him to listen to TeamSpeak.
Okay, very good. Yeah, because I have some IQ2s in reserve. Do you know if he's coming to Hamvention?
I sent an email and asked and have not gotten a reply.
Okay, well, if he's coming, it would be good to meet him, and then we could get him set up then.
He also had worked on Hermes Light and some other projects like the HPSDR RTL SDR software that simulates, it takes an RTL and simulates HPSDR protocols. I think it's still Protocol 1.
Yeah, that's one of the things I want to do with the Tangerine SDR is we're going to have a USB 2 host. So I want to be able to plug in a RTL dongle and then be able to process the data with the FPGA, and we could emulate any protocol we want by doing that. So it'd be kind of a quick and easy way to get instant hardware when you don't really have an RF board yet.
Yes, and that's one of the impediments. You get all kind of enthusiastic, and then you realize you have a whole bunch of things to buy, and you'd like to start using them as you get the pieces.
Yeah, and I mean, who doesn't have a dongle, right?
It's pretty amazing that at the price performance kind of level, it's hard to beat.
Do you get enough data out of the dongle to make putting it through the FPGA interesting?
Well, I'm not convinced of that. I mean, supposedly you can get up to 2 megahertz worth of bandwidth, but it's only 8-bit data. And then you've seen the Kerberos, right, which has basically 4 dongles on 1 PC board through a USB hub into 1 USB port. So basically you get 4 streams of data. So the FPGA might be kept a little busy with that at least.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't sound like – I mean, most of the reasons we've used the FPGAs in designs is to do the data reduction before we put it on a wire. If it fits on a USB 2, you shouldn't need an FPGA probably, is my suspicion.
Well, you shouldn't, but there may be some interesting things you can do if you have an FPGA in line. So that's kind of – and at least – well, one of the things you can do is you can emulate HPSDR protocol, which you can't really do. I guess maybe you could do that with a Pi. So plug the dongle into a Pi, and I think Dave, is that what N1GP was doing?
I think he was just doing it with any Linux computer. You compile some C code, and it talks to the dongle, and then it throws out a stream that looks like is HPSDR compatible.
Yeah, I mean emulating the Protocol 1 or even Protocol 2 stuff shouldn't be. That definitely wouldn't require. In fact, it's probably easier to do with a general purpose computer than an FPGA.
Well, you got to remember, Scotty's an FPGA guy.
Well, and also the fact is that we're going to have the data engine hardware much before we're going to have any other RF hardware. So it may be the only way we're going to get RF into it at the beginning, just to test things.
Should back end connect the HPSDR board to feed it data.
Yeah, we could do that. In fact, we were talking about that today. You could build a shield for the data engine that would supply a clock to 4 Mercury boards and hook to the Atlas bus and talk to the Atlas bus and talk protocol out the other side. Talk HPSDR protocol out the other side if you want. You could basically take the Metis board and throw it away.
So what's on the data engine?
Data engine, the first one we're going to build is going to have a MAX 10 50K LE FPGA, USB 3.0, full 5 gigabit per second device port, 2 gigabit Ethernet ports on a 3-port switch, and let's see what else, a bunch of slow speed I/O like for shields. It's going to have it's going to have a USB 2 host port for plugging in things like dongles. Going to have a bunch of RAM on it. Going to have some flash memory. And it's going to have 3 ports that we're going to use. 2 of the ports are going to be for RF boards. So you're going to put the receiver and transmitter or 2 receivers or multiple channel boards or whatever you want to do on those 2 ports, 1 or 2 of them together. And then the clock generator is going to be on a separate port, and we're going to be able to plug in a high-resolution clock or GPSDO or various flavors of clock modules depending on how much performance you need and how much money you got to spend. So it'll be really configurable to whatever level of performance you need.
What's the interfaces on the ports look like?
How do you mean, on the low-speed ports?
No, to connect in the RF ports.
Oh, it's going to be parallel LVDS, at least on the beginning board. We could do JESDI 204, but not with this FPGA. We need a more expensive FPGA. This is designed to be the low-end board where the target price is $200 for selling the DE board. So we're trying to keep the price as low as possible for reasonable performance. But if you're going to want an SoC FPGA or you're going to want 100,000 LEs or something, this is not the board for you because those things are just too expensive.
Okay, so LVDS. So what's the data rate you think you can take through the port?
Well, I'm going to have 24 LVDS pairs on the connector. And so if you run all those at, 800 megahertz or 500 megahertz, I don't know what. It depends on what. I think that the Cyclone or the Max 10, I have to go back and check to see what it'll do. But it may do as high as 800 megahertz LVDS, and that's a lot of data.
So 24, that's 24 bits, essentially, 24-bit wide?
Right. So, I mean, say we can run at 500 megahertz, then that's 3 bytes, so, 1,500 megabytes per second.
I see.
So, I mean, that's the limit of the interface. Now, whether you'll be able to actually process that much data in the FPGA or generate that much data with the plugin board, that's, to be determined.
Yeah, no, understood. It's essentially the ceiling of what's going to go through there.
Right. And so it's, if we need to, we graduate to higher performance plugin boards, then we're going to have to graduate to a higher performance FPGA that has transceivers on it. And then we can run at the transceivers at 3 gigabits to 6 gigabits, depending on which FPGA we pick. Even higher than that, depending on how much money you have for the FPGA. And the connectors, we're going to use the M.2 connector. And I don't know what the highest rating for that is. It's pretty fast, but I'm not sure it extends up into the gigahertz range.
Can't say I know what an M.2 connector is. Surely I can't solder it, I bet, though.
It's a SSD connector for notebooks. It's the NGFF type connector.
I will tell you, Dave likes M.2 connectors on his single board computers.
Yeah, he uses them for the SSDs, right? Either PCIe or SATA.
Yeah.
But we're going to use the physical. Sorry, Bill, go ahead.
No, I just Googled that up, and that's actually not too bad. I was afraid it was one of these little micro thingies.
No, I think it's a 0.5 millimeter pitch, but then the two rows are offset by 0.25 millimeter. And so it's a pretty fine pitch connector. It's 75 pins, of which 8 pins are always used as a key. So you get 67 pins of usable I/O. And they're designed to run SSDs that have blatantly fast transfer speeds. So you get a relatively high speed connector. And the beauty of it is the connectors in quantity cost like 80 cents. So you try to put like an FMC or an HSMC connector on, you find out that the connectors cost $10 a piece, and then you got to buy the mating connector. Well, these are 80 cents a piece, and the mating connector is just gold fingers on the other board.
Yeah.
And it's a well-vetted interface protocol.
Yeah, so probably the biggest problem you have is keeping people from plugging in their SSDs to the connector. But we're not going to be restricted to the physical size of the NGFF form factor. So we don't have to stick to 22 or 30 millimeters wide, or I think 110 millimeters is the longest, or 120. So we can make something a little bit bigger. And then the idea is to put the two connectors on the same plane, on the same along the same line, so that you could build a larger board that would connect to two connectors. So really you can have twice the throughput if you're willing to take up both connectors with one plug-in board.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah, because my disillusionment with so many of these SDR boards that they have a nice high-speed FPGA, and then they throttle it all down to, a USB 2, or they throttle it all down to, something, some kind of slow-speed parallel interface. And, you don't get the advantage of the data paths that you want. So you end up being restricted to 768K or, 1.5 megabits or something like that. What if you want to demodulate digital TV? How would you do that? You can't get the 8 megahertz worth of bandwidth that you need across some of these interfaces.
No, I don't want to demodulate digital TV. I just want to record it all at once.
Well, okay, whatever. You still have to get to the data.
No, I was saying I need even more bandwidth because I want all the channels all at once.
Yeah, and then you need petabyte hard drives, right?
Oh, those are easy. I mean, just, pay a cloud provider enough money and then no problems.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how this morphs. We're just in the early stages now of trying to figure out what we're going to make and how cheap we can make it. So It's and we may end up making some variants, lower cost variants, with like we lose the USB 3 device port and just use gigabit Ethernet. We have a lot of shield I/O, and I added this up too. And all the shields I want to be able to handle a Raspberry Pi shield. I want to be able to handle our Arduino shield, a Click shield, an Ultra 96 board shield. But if you add up the cost of all those connectors, it's like $50. So that's just not going to happen. I'm not going to spend half of the cost of the BOM just on connectors, so I can plug in all these different shields.
Aren't those connectors just .100 pins, or what am I missing?
Well, some of them are, but some of them are not. Like the Ultra 96, they have a high-speed connector, which is a surface mount, kind of like a PMC connector, if you know what that is.
No, I don't. But actually, I was just you said Arduino and Pi, and the rest of them I just sort of ignored. So, okay, so the other ones have more exotic connectors.
Yeah, and if you look, I mean, I didn't really try too hard to minimize the cost, but, you know, the Arduino connectors are if you use Molex-type long-pin connectors, they're like a couple of bucks a piece, and there's five of them. So, I mean, that's $10 in connectors just to have the privilege of plugging in an Arduino board that you may never use.
No, I don't disagree. I was horrified and shocked, honestly, when we did the original HPSDR board as to how much a damn connector. I mean, every bleeping connector on the thing was a buck or something, it seemed like.
Well, yeah, well, the Atlas board kit with, six of those DIN connectors, wasn't that was like $35, and I can tell you Tapper made very little on those.
Yeah, no. Yeah, those ones, I mean, I sort of understood, but even just the, the 3.5mm connectors on the boards was, I mean, shockingly expensive.
Yeah, like every connector is $1 and headers are $1. When you add them all up and there's 10 of them, it's like, wow, a lot of money spent just for those.
Oh, well, sounds interesting. Actually, recording the whole, how wide is the FM broadcast band? 20 megahertz?
Yeah, 88 to 108, right?
So we've certainly got A to D converters that could record. I was reading somewhere an article in the last month or two on people started trying to archive the whole AM and FM broadcast bands at once. And, sort of like, I think the Wayback Machine people were starting to get into this.
Yeah, it's interesting because I listen to a lot of old-time radio shows. And a lot of the old-time radio shows, especially the early ones from the 30s, were done live. And they didn't really have recording equipment, so they were not recorded at the studio. A lot of them weren't. And interestingly enough, if you find them, what they're from is from a guy who recorded them off the air. And you get, you know, radio IDs and things like that on the recording because they recorded them off of, you know, WABC in New York.
Yeah, it would be, interesting to listen to some of that from a historical perspective. Or it, we certainly have the capability to do it today. I would dearly love to find the original, like, Apollo news coverage as it happened. Would love to be able to, watch or listen to that. And I'm sure some TV network somewhere has it, but nobody seems to have published it yet.
Well, you've seen the new movie, right?
No, I haven't. I know there's one out there. This is the documentary, not the Neil Armstrong one.
Yeah, just recently the documentary, and they uncovered a whole bunch of archive footage that they included in it, which I think they're claiming it's worth going to see just for that.
Yeah, it is. They got a really good write-up in the Wall Street Journal. I guess it previewed in IMAX in a couple of places, but Austin was not one of them, unfortunately.
Yeah, interestingly enough, I believe Phoenix was one of the places, and like a dummy, I didn't go.
Yeah, well, I'm a bit of an Apollo groupie, so it... I seek those things out when I was really perturbed when that movie wasn't anywhere around here.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I mean, you've got a pretty progressive town around there. I would think that they would play it there.
I don't know. I am surprised because the biggest IMAX theater here is the one at the Texas State History Museum in downtown Austin. They've got a huge laser-driven IMAX, which... suppose this movie was done in IMAX, but would have liked to have seen it. But it was not playing there.
Well, I guess we'll both have to go see it on the small screen.
Yeah, well, I got to figure it's going to run again. I mean, it must be running again after, or I would assume in July.
Oh, that's right. So this is the 50th anniversary, right? So they got to run it in July for sure, especially on the 20th.
Yes.
I think that's the plan is to run it in July and have it all ready for wider distribution.
I'll definitely go see it in July because we're always looking for a place to get in out of the heat.
That is true.
So, Bill, are you going to Hamvention this year?
God, no.
Hey, how about DCC?
I doubt it. Well, actually, right before DCC, I had changed roles at work, and my work life has become way more involved than it used to be.
Oh, that's too bad, I guess. Or maybe it's a good thing if you've got job security and you like it.
I don't know about job security. It's love-hate. The hours are horrible, but I like the technology, and I like the team I'm working, and it's a leadership role, so it's probably... my suspicion is it will be the last project I work on.
So then you're going to retire?
Yeah, unless something... I mean, yeah, I won't do another project I don't like.
Yeah, I agree to that.
But if there's something else that comes along that's interesting... I mean, this was the lead of this project quit, and I got sort of thrown into it, and it's worked out. I mean, I hadn't planned on working this hard this late in my career, but... yeah, sort of enjoying it a bit. You know, it's love-hate. The hours are hard, but the work is good, and it's interesting technology.
So there's something to be said for that. Oh, sorry, go ahead, Dave.
Well, Scotty, a couple times Bill complains about his team releasing new code on Friday night.
Releasing on Friday?
Oh, God, we've had a couple deployments go sideways on Fridays, so we try not to do that anymore.
So you have to work all weekend to fix it?
We haven't had any. We had to work in the weekend. We've had ones where we've had to work fairly late into the night on Friday to get it back in, you know, a somewhat upright fashion.
Sounds like something to be avoided.
It is, but sometimes you got to do it.
Yep, that's for sure. And like a lot of the projects I work on at work, some of them are fun because I get to use some of the same technology that we use on SDRs. So, you know, I get to learn how to do it, and I get to apply it to both spheres, and it's kind of fun that way.
I get some of that, too. I get to, with my connections over with engineering, I get to see things and do things that I normally wouldn't bump into too much. And it's amazing how much of it is transferable. If I could, I don't get to count like a software-defined radio paper, but it's like if I was in engineering, pretty much everything I do would count on the dossier.
Well, do they pressure you, do they encourage you to publish stuff, though, at where you're at?
Oh, yeah. I'm a regular tenure-track faculty.
Okay, so then they want papers. They want you to disseminate your knowledge everywhere, right? Because that gets the name of their school out.
Yeah, and I'm in natural resources, so they don't expect people in natural resources to be worrying about FPGAs or small computers or, you know, where it comes is I work a lot with GPS, I work a lot with LIDAR, I work a lot with those kinds of things, and the overlap with the engineers is there.
Oh, okay. For some reason, I thought you worked in electronics. I guess that's just your hobby part, right?
Yeah, and then on top of all that, I can program.
But that's something you taught yourself outside of the scope, right?
Oh, I learned Fortran. I did take a class in Fortran in 1974.
Okay. That sounds like about the year I took a class in Fortran, too. That was the extent of programming at the school I went to, which is why I took my master's degree at a different school.
But I've been writing code ever since about 1980, it's been part of my professional life.
Okay, so, well, but you pretty much are self-taught programming after you learned Fortran, right? You, I mean, you learned C yourself, right?
Yes, yes, because my boss didn't want me to use C. He couldn't read it. So I had to, but then I moved to a new job, and everybody kind of expected you to know C.
Oh, you see Mike says down there? He predates all of us.
Yep. Yeah, I wasn't in college at that time.
Well, Mike, I took Fortran 4 with Watt 4 and Watt 5. That's WATFOR and WATFIV. So you probably know what all that means.
I had that same book, Scotty.
Yeah, ancient stuff, right?
I'm reading a really interesting book about Claude Shannon, and it's interesting that he has connections both. His entropy formula is also in my field called Shannon Diversity Index.
Wow, how old is that?
He worked in the late 40s when he wrote these papers.
So is that the time he came up with the communications theory stuff too?
Yes, and that's the basis for all the compression algorithm, or many of the compression algorithms and many other uses. So it's a very interesting book about his life, and he did all this stuff when he was in his 20s, which was a lot of it. And then he was kind of, he also liked to ride unicycles and juggle.
He's much more coordinated than I'll ever be. I'll ask you, what's the title of your Shannon book there?
I don't remember. It's in my book bag upstairs. I'll have to send Bill an email or something, or maybe post it on the HPSDR list.
Is it a recent biography?
Yeah, I think it's got a name like A Curious Mind or something like that.
I think I recently remember reading or seeing a book review of a Shannon biography in the last year or so, and it's thinking I gotta get around to reading that one.
I mean, I tell people I'm reading this book, and they say, "Well, what's that about?" And I explain it, and they just, their eyes roll. And I, but people like you guys, you understand what I'm talking about.
A Minded Play, How Claude Shannon Invented the Information Age.
That's it.
Yeah, this is on my gotta-read list, as is, like, an incredible pile of books I'm waiting to read.
Well, like me, too.